Hey, Josh. You ever see a Sasquatch?
No, not exactly.
What do you mean, not exactly?
Well, I've seen a heap of tracks. Some big ones, some little ones. I remember back in 1912 when we was traveling up the Columbia River way with a bunch of fellers. Doing a bit of hunting. We stopped to camp for the night. Well, during the night, something snuck into our camp and tore it all to shreds.
Maybe it was a bear.
What, no bear?
How do you know you didn't actually see it?
Well, I seen the tracks the next morning. They's about 18 inches long. No.
Sasquatch is a podcast about Bigfoot. It's recorded for the skeptics, the believers, the so-called knowers, and those who just have a casual interest in the subject. Information, visit sasquatch.com. This is Sasquatch, a podcast about Bigfoot. I am one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove, and I'm joined by my pal Mark Matsky. Tonight we're talking about our favorite sightings. So this is a topic that we both probably could spend hours just yammering on about. And one of the most important aspects of Bigfoot as a folklore is the sighting reports, especially going back to the really old sightings from the early 1900s, like the Albert Ostman sighting and some of those. So we're going to go through some of the ones that we like. I don't know necessarily that we're going to be saying that we think these actually happened, but just favorite sightings in general for whatever reason. So it could be just because we like the story. See, for me, Mark, and I don't know how this works for you, but for me, one of the reasons I love this topic is the stories. And whenever I try to explain it to someone, it's not necessarily that I think that the stories are real or not real. Mm-hmm. It's just that I like the way they're told or the way the story flows. And I don't know if that's because I'm a little bit of a writer or what, but how do you approach it? Like, what's your take on stories?
Yeah, I think that definitely there's a whole area of the stories that are just good stories. Mm-hmm. Like you say, I mean, they would, in any genre, they would be just interesting and have some conflict and resolution and the things that make stories stories. I'm with you. I don't necessarily, by saying I like the story, it does not imply anything about their veracity necessarily.
Yeah.
And having said that, you know, now there's book series in Bigfoot publishing circles that really are just compilations of stories, like the whole Rusty Wilson Campfire Story series. Mm-hmm. I mean, that goes on and on. There's like at least 5 different books that I know of that he's done, and just you know, putting all these stories into story form and short story form, and you know, like the very title of them says, campfire stories.
Right.
So there's an entertaining quality to them that whether you buy it or not, you don't have to say that because I enjoy this that it's gospel truth. It's just
exactly
a good story.
Exactly, and I think you can be a Bigfoot fan of the topic, and not necessarily a believer. I think you can also be a fan of the subject of Bigfoot just because you find the stories interesting, and you like the culture aspect of it, the kind of what am I thinking here? Kind of well, I go back to folklore again, but I don't think that's the word I'm looking for. Like, just this entire subject is so interesting trying to explain to people that aren't believers necessarily why I like the subject. And it isn't, you have these people who are very serious about the subject, and that's great. Like, guys like Brian Brown are wonderful because we need that. We need people out there trying to actively solve the mystery. But there are people who are just interested in, you know, in the subject itself, in the stories and the people that are involved. And I think that's kind of where you and I lie.
Yeah, we're in that spectrum for sure.
Definitely.
And the thing that's so cool is that you can love the idea of Sasquatch, mm-hmm. but that does not necessarily translate into quote-unquote belief, mm-hmm. which I know that you've said in a previous episode that's a phrase that's troubling to you, and it is to me in as it relates to Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. I've heard many speakers who have said essentially the same thing, that it's not about believing yeah. in this creature as if our belief makes him exist. Mm-hmm. Just the idea of it. And I would also say in a very broad sense, and understand what I mean when I use the term, in a romantic sense.
Sure.
You know, broadly defined.
Yeah.
We love the idea that there is a quote-unquote noble savage, mm-hmm. or perhaps a colony, out mm-hmm. there roaming around sort of free from the constrictions of civilization and doing their own thing, and they may be observing us or not, but there's a classic sort of romantic idea attached to that.
Absolutely. Gosh, you put that so well, so eloquently compared to me. So what we want to talk about are sightings, and some of these, if you're anyone who's been around the subject of Bigfoot for a while, a lot of these that we're going to talk about, you probably are well acquainted with, and that's fine. If you want to drop out at the mention of Albert Ostman or William Rowe, I totally understand, because they're in every book. And that's something that has struck me lately in reading the John Green books that I'm reading, and I just read the Peter Byrne book. I can't remember the name of it right now, but they both tell the same stories over and over, and they're mm-hmm. not the only ones, because I've read those stories in almost every Bigfoot book that I've read, and even what Lauren Coleman retold some of those in Bigfoot, True Story of Apes in America, which is one of the better, I'm getting a little off topic here, but it's one of the better introductory books to the subject, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And that, you know, Lauren Coleman goes places that most researchers don't. Mm-hmm. Or won't, mm-hmm. Talking about reproductive theory,
yes.
and that's Bigfoot's very, sex life.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, fascinating chapter.
It is. And you know what really blew my mind is at when he came to the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, that was essentially the subject of his presentation. And he said, you know, this is pretty much PG-13, folks. If you've got some little ears that are sitting next to you, just be forewarned that this is the topic that's coming. And having said that, he's the only researcher that I'm aware of who has even asked the questions that would necessarily be needed to ask if, you know, you're seriously considering that this is a creature that reproduces and has juveniles. I mean, you get a lot of conversation about, we saw a juvenile Sasquatch, mm-hmm. but how did the juvenile Sasquatch
come to be?
Yeah.
And I don't think it was from the, there was an account in there about a Bigfoot and I think a cow or a horse.
Yeah, a cow.
That poor cow, you know? All right, anyway. So that's going to go down as one of your favorite sightings.
Oh, my goodness.
So, sightings. I mentioned Albert Ostman.
Yeah.
Is that one of your favorite sightings? Do you consider, you know, sighting stories? Is that one of your go-tos?
You know what? Once upon a time, it probably would have been. Uh-huh. And going back to the very, you know, first times where I was researching the topic through Marion Place's books as a kid. Uh-huh. And I think there's a... You know, absolutely, there still is in me the idea that, wow, that would be cool to be him.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so the mind goes pretty crazy with speculation there and different scenarios. You know, to this day, Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's not the first one that I think of anymore, but I certainly think that it's a huge introductory story. And maybe for the reasons that you mentioned, that it's appeared in so many of sort of the elementary Bigfoot books, and it's just so much a part of the lore at this point.
Yeah, let me real quickly just mention to the new people who are new to the subject. The Albert Ostman account is a really quick overview. He was a trapper or something, and he was out mm-hmm. there just kind of on a vacation, basically scouring the countryside on what amounted to a vacation. And during the middle of the night, he was supposedly taken up in his sleeping bag by a Bigfoot and hauled away to a cave where he was held captive with what he called a family of Bigfoot. It was a mom, a dad, and then two juveniles. And eventually he escaped by tricking the Papa Bigfoot into eating some snuff.
Yes.
It's a very unique story. It's a little unbelievable, as a lot of these are. But it is interesting in that some of the characteristics and even some of the actions he recounted, seeing take place, have been mentioned by others in sighting reports. And since it's such it's an unbelievable story in a lot of ways. I have to wonder then, did it inform, sightings down the road? Like, are those people just No.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of an effect it would have had in that regard, really, because I would imagine then that we would have more abduction reports than we have. Mm-hmm. Don't you
it
think?
Is, I mean, if, it, absolutely. Yeah.
If it really was a case of a copycat, or not a copycat, but just having that sort of bleed through effect on other reports, then I would assume that there would be more Bigfoot carried me away. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had an experience like that too, and there just doesn't seem to be many, if any, of those that I'm really aware of. I mean, the thing that is really, really intriguing about Ostman is the level of detail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which totally makes sense,
Yeah, if you read his account, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes into not just, physical characteristics, but... like I said, things that he saw them do. I always think of he saw the young male kind of jumping up and down on its butt, basically. Mm-hmm. This is a really odd aspect to that story.
Yeah. But, right. Yeah, it's the type of thing, the things that he mentions make no sense unless they're true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he were making up details... unless you're just making them up arbitrarily, but it's the type of thing where it's so weird that you wouldn't say what was going on unless he's just reporting to you. he's engaging that kind of behavior,
sure.
Bouncing up and down on his butt, or there's a female, right? Like a young female.
There's a young female, and supposedly the father was trying to make Ostman basically be her man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it's an odd story, and he, if I'm not mistaken, he swore an affidavit or something like that.
I've read that.
Yeah.
I've read that.
It was all true, and I know a judge said that he believed everything he'd said. So, there was that, but there were parts of that story that make no sense. Like, when they went back to try to map out where he was and everything, nothing was really quite as he had said.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was actually a point in his story where he said, didn't he say he had to crawl through a hole in a cliff, and when he came out the other side, there was this valley? Wasn't it something like that?
Right. If I remember, it was in sort of a valley itself. Yeah. He had to go through a small opening to get there.
Right.
Is that kind of the idea?
I think that was the idea.
Yeah.
See, the William Rowe account is one that I could definitely believe. It doesn't have the amount of detail, but it's such a... there's nothing wild about it. You know, the Ostman story is this man being kidnapped by Bigfoot and taken away, and he's going to become the bride to another
mm-hmm.
another one. The groom, I guess, not the bride. Well, who knows what's after it. But anyway, so I find the William Rowe account interesting because it's basically just a guy watching some Bigfoot move about in a canyon or a field, something like that. And I always thought that one was interesting too. And he did describe some of the things he saw them doing that I thought sounded, you know, believable. It wasn't anything too crazy. I don't know what you think of the William Rowe one. It's definitely not as romanticized.
No, it's not. But now that was one that John Green.
Yeah, I'm
basically
holding,
broke, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the best of Sasquatch Bigfoot is what I'm holding right now, and it's in there. It's detailed in there. Yeah, I think he's the one that got a hold of that first.
And this was the one that wasn't the creature eating leaves.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he even described sort of the motion of the lips and so forth as it kind of stripped.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he's got the William Rowe. I don't know if there's a drawing here, and I don't think it was William Rowe that actually drew it. I think it was an artist's rendition of it, what he described. But it had breasts and everything. So, again, we get the female Bigfoot. Ape Canyon as well is a great story, and one that I think is, if there's a Bigfoot actually in existence, I could see the story being legitimate. There's too many aspects to the story that I find believable for it not to be, for me not to put some credence behind it. It's basically these guys were, again, they're kind of miners, right? Like coal miners, and they're up in this Ape Canyon, as it became known, but they were besieged overnight by Bigfoots from a cliff above them throwing rocks down onto the cabin they were in. And, I mean, there's obviously more to the story than that, but,
right.
You know. But I think it's not only a great, like, horror movie type scenario, but it's just such a cool story, and there are believable aspects to it.
There are, and it's so good of a story that it's been reenacted in a number of the Bigfoot films and sort of the nonfiction ones. Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot, even has like a flashback sequence that's retelling the story of Ape Canyon. But, you know, when you think of this in terms, like we were before, of pure story and sort of folklore elements to it, the thing about Ape Canyon that really stands out to me is that it does have that cautionary tale element to it, meaning that, you know, it's not as if the Bigfoot descended on that cabin just because they're purely malevolent creatures. It was revenge.
Yeah.
Because they had picked one off and shot it, and it fell off of the cliff down into the riverbed below. So it's not just here's these wild animals they're descending upon our camp, but they're motivated by a type of revenge. And so from a folklore standpoint, it becomes, you know, look what happens to you when you mess with nature, you know, when you go out, you know, just seeking to kill and destroy and do the type of things that human beings do. So I'm not saying that in order to say that this isn't historic or it didn't happen, but I think it retains a lot of its storytelling appeal because there is a type of moral to the story, which is, you know, don't go around shooting humanoid ape-like creatures in the woods, or you may be sorry.
I think you could count the Patterson-Gimlin encounter as a classic Bigfoot sighting, and it's one of the few that is documented with photographic evidence, and so it's actually my favorite because I love the fact that I've actually got to hear Bob Gimlin speak live and tell the stories. I think you know this probably better than I do. Tell the story of Bob and Roger running into the Bigfoot.
You know, I just loved hearing Bob Gimlin tell the story as well, because so matter of fact, and a lot of the things that he mentioned in his presentation, which really was just his his recollections, which was really cool. You know, there's no PowerPoint presentation or anything. It's just a man and a microphone.
With us, were with our sleeping bags and our equipment all on it. Rode up this creek bed about 3.5 miles from where we were camped, and come around a bend by the creek where there was a, I don't know how many folks here are, understand when I say downfall tree. There was a tree downfall with the root system up. It's probably 8 to 10, 12 feet high, and that had caused the creek to reroute itself and go around there. And I'm not real good on diagrams like Jeff and some of these other guys are, so I could, no, I'm not comparing myself to Jeff. I would never even try that, let me tell you. Anyway, when we came around that bend in the creek, this creature stood across the creek about as far as that gentleman is right there with paper in his hand. It was standing when I saw it. Now, it may have been stooped down when Roger first saw it, but I was just a horse length or so behind Roger leading the pack horse. And when I saw the creature, it was standing up looking across the creek the way where we were. But it immediately turned and started walking away, just taking natural steps. I mean, natural looking steps to us, which measured out 42 to 48 inches in the field of total, which is a pretty good step. And there's some pretty tall men here. And I almost dare them to make a step comfortably that long and keep on walking. But anyway, so that's how this film footage kind of got started. Roger, little horse, kind of threw a little, I don't know what kind of dance you'd call it, but he wasn't. Roger was trying to bail off and get his camera at the same time, which he did. Roger is a very agile man. Of course, he's a rodeo cowboy, and he was a great athlete. So he bailed off that little horse with his camera and ran across the creek, trying to get that camera focused on the creature. There was a little incline of sand from alongside the creek on the other side. Well, Roger kind of stumbled and fell when he got on the other side of that. He went down on his elbows, and if you've seen the film footage from the beginning to the end, you'll see that all that shaky part of it at the beginning. You can't hardly identify anything. Anyway, that's what happened, and then Roger realized that the creature was moving on, and all this time I was sitting right where I was. I stopped, the pack horse pulled loose, or I let him go, I don't know. Everything happened so rapidly, I really don't remember whether he pulled loose or I just threw the rope back at him, because I was having a little hard time holding my horse, which is was an older roping horse, and he was a little bit easier to handle than Roger's little horse that had lost spunk in him. So there's when it all started going kind of wild, and then Roger wanted to relocate because she was moving.
But he was talking about details after the fact that I had never heard before, you know, such as covering up the prints and so forth.
But get up on a stump about 3.5-4 feet high, maybe, that was alongside the where she went and made her tracks. And I had on a cowboy boot with a riding heel, which is pretty sharp heel, if not you understand what that said. And at that time, I was a little heavier than I am now, weighed about 175 pounds. And I jump off beside this footprint tracks with that heel, with one foot hit first, and see how deep I could go into the soil that she walked through.
You know, they examined the tracks, and you know, as Bob tells the story, they spent the night in the truck, and it started to rain, and he was concerned about preserving the tracks, so he went out there and covered some of them up himself, being so ingenious as to strip bark off of trees for the purpose of covering the tracks to make sure that they were preservable.
Whether it is an actual creature or a dude in a suit, it's a great story. Those are four of the big reports that you constantly will hear over and over, and I'm sure there's other ones that we're missing. Let's both go and give like one lesser known story that we both love. And I think we both love that Minerva Monster story,
yeah,
which we talked about
yes.
in the last episode, or actually we might not have actually released that episode yet, but One of mine is one of the stories I covered from Ohio for the Ohio Bigfoot Conference Facebook page. It was a sighting report from Coshocton in the, I'm going to say like 1919, something like that, in the Coshocton area. And it was a story that went on through the paper for, I think, five or six different articles over the course of a few months. And it culminated in the tale of a what the article called an oversized gorilla leaping out of a tree onto these six men who were out trying to hunt it. And that story is so believable, the way it plays out and the way the characters involved mention, you know, talk constantly about what they think this thing is, what they think it's not. At one point, it's referred to as a giant. Was it a giant? Like a raccoon, I think, is what the one of the witnesses called it. Like they're constantly trying to, you know, kind of figure out what it is other than a giant ape. But when you get into the later articles, it really is good. Now I'm going to have to post some of those clippings on this story when I put this episode up.
Yeah.
But that one is one of my favorites. And if you're interested in any of these lesser known Bigfoot sighting reports, let me know and I can send you some. I've been posting them all on the Ohio Facebook page, but I would gladly just send them out to people or, you know, link you to the columns that I've been doing over there. But that one is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I know I did a terrible job of telling it, but to be honest, it's almost impossible to explain what all happened in like less than five or six paragraphs.
Wow. Yeah, I've got really two. That's cheating, I know. But both of them come out of a book that I really changed the game for me as far as the Bigfoot topic, and it's simply entitled Bigfoot by B. Ann Slate and Alan Berry. And this was the first time that I had ever heard of what's come to be known as the Sierra recordings or the Sierra sounds. And Alan Berry was actually involved with sort of the first wave of that Sierra camp. And to real quickly sketch that story, there was a camp that only a handful of people knew about. They brought Alan Berry in after there had been significant activity in and around that camp. And what would happen is they would go into this sort of self-made structure that was completely enclosed, made with logs and wood, and they'd wait in there, and pretty soon they would hear footfalls, and they would begin to hear tree knocks and also vocalizations. And this really was my introduction to those elements of the Bigfoot phenomena. Before that, I had just read about Bigfoot sightings, red eyes in the dark, you know, footprint discoveries. But it wasn't until this book that you got the sense that people were experiencing more than those things, that they were hearing sounds and they were, you know, close, relatively close to these creatures, hearing them and hearing them vocalize with whistles and howls and even sort of the gibberish talk that you people may have heard on some of the recordings themselves. So I just love that idea. There's even this, towards the end of that account, he writes that they heard what sounded like a really huge Bigfoot and then another smaller one kind of paralleling each other walking along this ridge, and every so often they'd knock a tree. And they could hear the knocks sort of fading into the distance, going back and forth until finally they couldn't hear them anymore. And that just really sort of struck me as amazing and kind of cool. And in that same book, then there's this real brief report of these guys who were up in a camp in California. And, you know, an open pickup truck in the back, and they're all riding in this pickup truck. Who knows what else they were doing at the camp. But they're driving down this dirt road, and somebody looks back, and there's a Bigfoot running after their truck, and it's a gigantic Bigfoot. Like, I want to say it's in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 feet tall. So big that these guys went back later on, and they took it upon themselves to make, and this, there's a picture of this in the book, a like a 12-foot cardboard cutout that approximated the size of what was chasing their truck. And they checked it with the branches that the creature was bumping into as it chased their truck down. And so the picture in the book is these guys standing there with their, you know, their big Bigfoot craft that they made to retell the story. And so, you know, the stories of those, the gigantic Bigfeet has always sort of held my attention pretty well. Those are pretty neat.
Yeah, the huge ones. The wasn't there like a sci-fi movie that was a basically a Godzilla height Bigfoot terrorizing people?
Yes. There's a whole genre of those, Seth.
Oh, yeah. All right. We're going to close out this episode, and we'll be back with another one in the next few days.
Always travel the creeks, people.